Hey, indie filmmakers, I'm Griffin Hammond.
I'm Nick Bodmer, and on this week's episode, I'm trying to decide whether to buy a Panasonic Lumix GH5 or the cheaper G85.
Plus, your questions about shooting with the full sensor, keeping focus while moving, and if film school is really worth it. Hey, Nick.
Mr. Hammond, man about the world, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm in Singapore right now.
Singapore, which is its own country.
Yeah, it's a city, state, a sovereign city. It's part of, like, it shares the island with Malaysia.
Very cool. How is that going so far?
Good. I did one workshop here already at the Cathay Photo Store in Singapore, and then I'm doing another workshop after we record this.
Very good. Oh, yeah, it was this morning there for you, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like noon right now. And gotcha. This is my fourth stop on the tour. I've been in Indonesia, Malaysia, Vietnam, now Singapore, and then I go on to the Philippines and Thailand afterward.
Very cool. Very cool.
And this is our 20th episode.
No way.
Yeah. Happy 20th anniversary, Nick.
Yeah, what is 20th anniversary? Is it you're supposed to get me something wood or platinum?
I don't know.
Or something.
I guess we're almost at half a year of doing this. We're getting close.
Is that really what it is? I guess it's a week, and then we've had some breaks.
We're 20 weeks in, and we took 2 weeks off, so yeah, we're 22 weeks into this podcast already.
Spruce. It's 20th anniversary is spruce. Don't worry, I looked it up.
Oh, and I'm doing something today. I did something today that I know will make you happy. I like formatted my SD card on my audio recorder.
If you can't hear it, that's a slow clap. That's a slow clap for you, Griffin.
So well now I have now I have 30 hours available to me on this 32 gig card, so we should be good this week. I shouldn't screw this
up. So in approximately 10 episodes, I should remind you again that it's time to to go ahead and format that bad boy.
Yeah. Well, Griffin, I also want to mention, you can't see this, but I'm wearing a t-shirt that says, I shoot 4K.
Is that a Panasonic? Where'd you get that?
This was actually at my first event in Indonesia. It was a huge event. There were 200 people there. It was a big stage and everything. I'll throw some Instagram photos in the show notes at hey.film. But this t-shirt was actually given to me by a fan. We have fans in Indonesia. There have been podcast listeners at every workshop I've done around Southeast Asia. And a guy named Made Aditya gave me this t-shirt.
That is very cool.
I'm now realizing the irony of wearing this shirt because, of course, I shoot the podcast in 1080 because there's no reason to shoot it in 4K.
No one can even read the shirt. The resolution's so bad.
No,
it's pretty big.
You can see it.
Well, hello, Indonesia and the rest of Southern Asia.
Yeah.
It's cool to hear we've got listeners all around the world.
And you can't see it, but I'm shooting in my hotel room overlooking Singapore. And it's pretty bright out there, even though it's a cloudy day. So to compensate, I'm actually using both of my Westcott flex lights.
Ooh.
At full power, just because I need to get that much light on myself to combat how much sun is coming in from behind me.
So Griffin, I have to give you a little bit of a hard time.
Why?
And so we had a little audio sync issue on the last podcast, didn't we?
So you know what happened?
No, I do, and I think it's my fault. That's actually where I was going to go with that.
No, I don't think it was your fault. I think you recorded the backup audio of my iPhone audio, so that. Mm-hmm. It was perfect. When I failed to, my audio recorder stopped because it filled up the 30 hours. There was about a minute gap where we were talking and we didn't have good audio. But you saved me by having that redundant audio. That's why I always think you should record extra audio if you can. But what I failed to realize is that the iPhone audio can skip and lag. So you can't sync it in one place and trust that it will continue to be synced.
Well, what I did was I realized when it got so out of sync so quick, I checked my settings on my Audio Hijack recorder, and it was set to basically, it wasn't inserting silence when there was silence. If it was no audio from the FaceTime app, it didn't record.
Oh,
so it was
like taking out the gaps?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So you had no chance of syncing that, so
well,
I fixed that. in this recording.
Oh, cool. Thank you. Well, also, this is what happened was you sent me your video files, and I think I was doing workshops in, I might have even been out of Indonesia by then. I might have been in Malaysia. And I finally got to the editing of the show around midnight or something, local time. And I was just really tired, and I was sitting in the bed editing, and I found myself like falling asleep while I was listening to it. And so,
because we're that exciting.
No, just it was that late. And you know, I had done most of the hard work already. I was just going through and like listening through it. And you know, I think I synced that audio at one point, screwed up the timing somewhere else, and didn't notice.
It's no big deal. Though I will say, I just looked over my recorder. I hope your audio is good this time, because I am not recording your audio. It must have gotten screwed up when we had a second phone call, because I was already rolling or something.
I think we'll be good with my audio this time.
I think my audio is recording. Yes.
Yes.
All right.
And if you're an audio-only listener, if you're not watching the YouTube version of this podcast, then you wouldn't even have noticed the sync issue. It was only for about a minute or 30 seconds probably in the middle of the episode that the sync was off.
Well, I'm glad we can show our mistakes as well. Trust me, we make plenty.
I've made several mistakes in these workshops that I've been doing, and I keep reminding people that I'm far from perfect, and I'm always making mistakes. Every time I go on a shoot, I make some major mistake. And I think what I love about filmmaking is that it's problem solving, and you're always trying to find a way to cover up your mistakes.
Yeah, I always like to remind people as well that you make lots of mistakes.
I actually knocked a GH5 off a table during one of the presentations, and everyone in the audience just goes, and I was like,
those are expensive.
I was like, calm down, people. I do this all the time. The camera can handle it. The lenses are strong.
I do this all the time.
I do drop things.
All right, so Griffin, I put my camera on eBay. It's time to upgrade.
So wait, you sold your, you had an Olympus.
Yeah, so I shot on the GH2 and the G6 were kind of my go-to cameras when I was doing a ton of video work.
Yeah.
And then when I kind of have not been doing as much and they were getting old, I was like, I should get some money for these while they're still valuable. And I thought maybe I was going to go mostly photos, and I decided to give the Olympus a try. And then we started this podcast, and the Olympus just does not work for video, and I realized I made a bad decision. So that's up on eBay, and I'm thinking G85.
Do you need people to go buy it? Do we put the eBay link in the show notes?
Yes. Although I think everyone here is going to buy whatever I say I'm going to buy next, not what just said, don't buy for video. But if you want, we'll share it. That would be great. I'm also selling an Intel NUC microcomputer. So check that out. So what do you think off the top? I mean, I've done some research. I have thoughts, but I'm going to let you let you tell me what you think before I say what I've been researching.
Well, and I actually, you know, of course, I know a lot about the GH5. I didn't even mention that they're launching it here in Southeast Asia. It's like release time right now, which is why I'm here doing these workshops. I know that camera very well. I don't know that much about the G85, although I've seen it at a lot of trade shows. I guess one thing I don't know about it is how much it costs. How much cheaper than the GH5?
It looks like I can get it with a kit lens for about $1,000.
Okay, so it's less than half the price.
Less than half the price, yeah. Because I would probably just sell the kit lens because I have a million lenses, and it looks like I'm going to get $200 or $300 for that on eBay. So call it a $700 body-only camera.
Yeah, and Panasonic makes a bunch of much smaller cameras that also use the Micro Four Thirds, but this is kind of a medium body size. It's not that really small point-shoot format. It's not as big as the GH5, but it's kind of a GH2 size, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's in the style of the GH line. You know, it looks like a DSLR and a few less controls. And yeah, definitely a little smaller, which actually I think is a plus. But
in fact, I don't know if you still have any GH2 batteries, but I think it uses the exact same batteries as the GH2.
I think I got rid of them all. I think I sold them.
So last night when I was sitting around at dinner with some of the Panasonic folks here, I was asking them about the G85, and they told me that it has in-body image stabilization. In fact, this was a camera that came out before the GH5, so it has some of the features that the GH5 has. It can shoot 4K, but it's not 60p, right? It's only 30?
It's only 30p, and it's a crop on 4K.
Oh, it's so it's like the GH3 or the GH4 in that it crops a little bit for 4K. That makes sense.
Yep.
But they were telling me that they almost want to position it as like a GH mini camera, because it really is very powerful. It can do a lot of the things that the GH5 does. In fact, I think it does. It still have a microphone jack and a headphone jack?
Ooh, good question. I don't know.
Though I think it does.
I really don't ever use those. Maybe, yeah. I would. I'd probably put my Rode on it if I could. It must, because the G6, which I used, had both of those.
But arguably, if you don't need dual SD card slots, if you don't need 4K 60p, and you don't need 180 frames per second in 1080, and if you don't need some of the like really advanced features, like, I don't know if it can do Vlog, it probably can't load LUTs, and it can't do like vector scopes and waveforms, but all of that stuff is kind of like icing on the cake. I imagine the G85 is going to get you exactly where you need to be.
Yeah, I'm going to be, I mean, just to cut to the chase, I'm leaning pretty strongly towards the G85. I'm a little, the GH5 has the newer autofocus system, which is the only thing that I'm like, ooh, you know, when I've taken pictures, mainly I take pictures of my kids running around, right?
Yeah.
So I need like quick autofocus or you lose the moment. But my guess is the G85 is pretty good.
Yeah.
So if anyone has the G85 out there and wants to leave us a comment, I'd love to hear what you think about it in photo mode. I know what it's going to do in video mode. I think it's fine for video. I'm actually more comparing them as still cameras, just wondering what the difference is.
Do you know what the slowest slow motion it can do is? Can it do 60 frames in 1080 or something?
I think it's 60 in 1080.
Yeah.
Let's see.
But
maybe
it can't do the 96. I wonder if it can do the 96.
That would be cool. That would be a handy thing to have as well. But, you know,
yeah,
I'm not sure it's worth $1,000 to go up.
And so the challenge, though, is you pointed out that on several sites, it says it's discontinued.
Yeah, I was a little confused. I was on B&H just looking, and they only have it with a kit lens. And I don't really want a kit lens because I have a whole array of Micro Four Thirds lenses already, and the lens isn't very good. It's like it's a 12 to 60, but it's not the nice Leica one. It's like the GP 3.5 to 5.6 or something like that. You know.
Yeah. And it's, so it's only the body-only version that B&H is showing is discontinued.
Well, they don't even show it on the site, so I did like their live chat, and I was like, hey, where's the body-only version? And then they're like, oh, here it is, but they sent me the GX85. I was like, that's not the same camera.
Yeah.
And then
I think the GX85 is one of those even smaller form factors.
Yeah, a really cool camera. I even was like, ooh, maybe I want something even smaller like that, but it has no articulating screen, and
yeah.
I realized, especially for this podcast where I need to like look at myself, I need a articulating screen.
So yeah, we didn't know if the camera was actually discontinued, so I just emailed my friends at Panasonic and said, hey, what's the deal with the G85? And they just said it's a very popular camera, and it's a little bit hard to find right now.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, I was gonna say it just came out like October last year, so
okay,
if there's a new one coming, tell me, but otherwise I think I'm probably gonna get this one.
So where are you gonna find it? Are you gonna have to buy one of the kit ones, or?
Yeah, I'll probably just buy one with the kit lens and then just sell the kit lens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, if I don't know if you'd have the money for the new 12 to 60 millimeter, but that lens seems like a perfect like tourism and just like everyday lifestyle lens.
Is that one you have? How big is it? Because that's always my problem. I love my, you know, prime lenses that are so small on these cameras.
Yeah.
It's
comparable in size to, you know, my 12 to 35.
Yeah.
It's similar in size to that. Maybe it's a little tiny bit longer.
Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad. Because I bought... What did I buy? Let me look it up. I bought a lens when I bought the Olympus, and it was just way too big. I was like, I can't even use this lens on this tiny camera.
And do you still have... One of your favorite lenses was that 20mm f1.7?
Pancake, yeah.
Yeah,
I still
you still have
that. I love it.
Yeah.
Yep. That and the 45mm f1.8 are my go-to.
Yeah.
The lens I bought was a 12-40 f2.8 Olympus.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Great lens. Has great reviews. It's like a $900 lens, but it was just way too big. So I need to go see the 12-60 in real life and see what it's like. Isn't there a 12-35 you really like?
Yeah, that's the one that it's the one I use all the time. Yeah. But
they have a new version 2 of it, right? That does the dual IS?
They both do dual IS. The new 12 to 35 just can do a little bit more data collection per second, which I'm not sure if it will make a noticeable difference. So both lenses are good. But I think that the 12 to 35 can be kind of limiting. 35 is not very close. It suits my style of shooting, but I think for most people, the 12 to 60, even though you're going to lose a little bit of light performance on the zoomed in end because it's an f/2.8 to 4 lens, I think it's just going to be more versatile for most people.
Oh, they're the same price too.
The 12 to 60 and the 12 to 35?
Yeah, they're both $1,000.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for most people, 12 to 60 probably makes sense.
Yeah. But I might just stick with my primes and just call it a day. I like running around with just like one lens on and just forces
you. Zoom with your feet.
Zoom with your feet. So that's what I will probably do. So look for that. Although I've got this GH3 you gave me. If I got a G85, then I'm just going to have to give this one back to you. It's no fun.
Yeah, I may send you an invoice for that GH3.
You, why don't you throw it on eBay? I'll ship it for you.
Okay.
Should we answer some questions?
Yeah. First, let me just talk about where I'll be over the next few days. On June 1st, I'll be in Manila, Philippines. That's actually going to be, it's a sold out event. It's going to be 200 people there, I think a little bit more than 200 people. And actually, by the time this podcast airs, I might already be doing that. That's on Thursday in Manila. And then okay. June 2nd, I'll be in Bangkok doing my final workshop in Southeast Asia. And then I'm flying back to Los Angeles, where I'm going to participate in the Dances with Films Film Festival on June 5th. So if you're in LA on June 5th, Monday night, I'm going to be screening Hand Cut as part of the Shorts program.
Cool.
And then a week later, June 16th through 18th, I'll be in Almaty, Kazakhstan for the Go Viral Festival. So you can find all of these things at griffinhammond.com/events if you're interested in attending.
Sounds like fun.
So our first question today comes from Sarah, who I actually met at my workshop in Indonesia. And she had two questions for me. One was about time lapses. And she's wondering how many photos I take in 1 minute. And that's easy. I usually am shooting one photo per second. So it's usually 60 photos a minute. So usually I'll shoot like 10 minutes of photos, 600 photos. And then she's also wondering if she only has two batteries for her camera. She says she has limited tools and she doesn't have an extra light to shoot with in the dark. What do you do? And I think, one, with lighting, you don't always need to bring it. I'm often just looking for the best light in every environment that I'm shooting in. So I'll just take my interview subjects to a window to shoot an interview. And to conserve battery life, I'm often turning the economy mode on my camera to its strictest setting and just let the camera shut itself off every minute that I'm not shooting. And I actually find with the GH5 and the GH cameras, it wakes up really quickly, so I don't mind letting it fall asleep, and then I can just push the shutter button real quick and it'll wake up. And that saves battery life.
You know, that question made me wonder, does the G85 have an intervalometer? Because that would be handy to have.
That's a good question.
And I looked it up while you were talking, and the answer is yes. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Woohoo!
That's the kind of feature I would assume that they would put on most of their cameras.
See, I don't think I've ever had a camera that's had it before, so.
Yeah, that'll be fun. You'll enjoy that.
Yeah, exactly. We got an email from Warren, and he is wondering if the GH5 sensor size is the same as the GH4.
It is the same sensor size, but it's actually shooting more pixels now. It's a 5100 or I think 5184 pixels across, and I think it's 3,888 pixels vertically. So it's a 20 megapixel sensor. But the rest of his question was, does that change how he does time lapses? And if he's shooting in 4x3 versus 16x9. If you were shooting 4x3.
We talked about this a little bit, didn't we? That you either have to crop or sometimes you do some weird squishing to make things look right.
Well, if you're shooting in 4x3 photos, and you're already shooting in 4x3 photos on the GH4, the workflow in Final Cut will be exactly the same. Because even though the pictures are a little bit bigger on the GH5, they're the same crop factor. I mean, it'll be the same. What am I looking for? The focal length, view, field of view will be the same. And Final Cut, when you change the size of an image, its default, when it's 100%, is just to fill the frame. So even though it's a bigger image, 100% is still the same size. It's still going to fill the frame. So yep. You'll still do the, if you drop it into a 16:9 timeline, you'll still do a 133.33 stretch to get that 16:9 image to stretch to, or sorry, that 4:3 image to stretch to 16:9 ratio.
Gotcha.
So yeah, it shouldn't change his workflow at all.
All right, good.
We got an email from David who says he's shooting a film and he's done most of the shooting in 4K, but he's also doing some 1080 and he has some archival footage in 1080. And he's just wondering, is there an advantage to exporting the final product in 4K, or should he use a smaller format to somehow make it more compatible with all his stuff? And, you know, is there some happy medium between 1080 and 4K that he should export? And what do you think?
Well, I mean, if it's me and I've captured in 4K, I'd probably at least edit in 4K and have the option. You can always export it as 4K and save that, and also in 1080 for whatever you need to deliver it for. But if you're going to go through the trouble of shooting in 4K, you might as well export in 4K is what I'm thinking. What do you think?
Exactly. I think unless you know that the only thing your film is going to do is go play on 1080 television and you're really concerned about the rendering times or something. Yeah, if you have all this 4K content, you can always up-res the 1080 stuff and it won't look as crisp as the 4K stuff when you're watching it on a 4K TV, but it's going to look as good as it was shot. And then in the future, if you decide to put it on a 4K projector or something in a movie theater, you at least have that best resolution. So yeah, I wouldn't lose resolution. You can always create a 1080 version for those outlets.
Yep, totally agree. We got an email from, oh, we both think we have an email.
Go ahead. You read the email.
All right, I'll read the email. Willie would like to know, how do you keep focus when you move around? Like what you were talking about when you were at the White House Correspondents' Dinner and walking around handheld. He's thinking maybe you crank your ISO so you can raise your aperture a bit and get a bigger depth of field.
I actually don't do that. I think many of the times that I'm shooting, I do want my aperture pretty wide open because I like the look of shallow depth of field, but also I'm often shooting in low light,
natural light situations. Yeah.
So, and you know, I don't want to introduce a bunch of noise either. So what I do is I use the push to autofocus. I have the continuous autofocus turned off, but I can, you know, unless it's like really dark, the autofocus is pretty reliable in terms of I can just point it at what I need to focus on and push it real quick. Even while I'm rolling, I can refocus. And I know as an editor that I don't need every second of a shot to be perfect. So if in the middle of a shot I decide to reframe it and refocus it, that's fine because I'm going to cut out that part and use it.
How
two
often
different
do
shots.
You accidentally stop recording when you push to focus?
Almost never. I'm used to this camera enough that I can halfway push the shutter without pushing it all the way.
I wonder if there's a way to disable that so that you, or maybe you can reassign push to focus to another button or something. Because that's always a concern I have is that I have done it before where I've accidentally stopped recording. And like when you're shooting a wedding, that's a bad.
I haven't tried using it on the GH5, but there's the new back button focus joystick. And it also has like a push in, like it operates as a button as well as a joystick. And I kind of wonder if it also can focus back there by pushing it or something. I don't know.
And I've also, you know, when I'm running around shooting a wedding, I've gotten halfway decent at manually focusing and just kind of eyeballing it and
pulling focus
as I go.
He brings up a point that affects weddings. He talks about how would you do the focus for a glide cam. And you can't really do a manual rack focus while you're on a glide cam because as soon as you touch the camera, you're going to mess up the glide. So a lot of times I would just point the camera at the ground, focus on the ground in front of me. Maybe that's 3 or 4 feet away, depending on how low I'm holding it. And I just know that now everything that's 3 to 4 feet away is going to be in focus. So I'll just follow the bride at that distance or, you know,
yep.
I can always set the focus on a distance and then shoot that way.
I will say, sometimes when I glide cam, though, I will take the aperture, you know, a little higher than I would otherwise, just to give me a little more wiggle room.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
If I'm shooting with my f1.7 pancake lens, I might shoot at f3 or something and just have a bit more depth of field.
Yeah. Although I kind of like that look of shallow depth of field on a glide cam where, especially when you're shooting in 60 frames or something and you slow it down, where something slowly comes into focus as you approach it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is cool.
He also had another question about how do I pick lenses. I've been talking about this stuff a lot at the workshops. I actually show all the different lenses I use. But he's talking about the difference between my 12mm prime and my 12 to 35mm zoom and why I would use one or the other. Mostly, I just use the 12 to 35 when I need the versatility of a zoom lens, when I need to get a lot of different shots on one lens. But it's f2.8, so it's actually... Nick, do you know how much less light f2.8 is versus f1.4?
Like 8 times or something like that?
Close. It's 4 times less.
Damn. I don't know. Maybe you can teach me the math. How does that work?
So all you have to remember is the number 1 and the number 1.4. Can you remember that?
Yes.
Okay. Now you know the entire f-stop scale, because all you have to do is double 1 and you get 2. So now we know it's 1, 1.4, 2, then double 1.4 and you get 2.8. So now it's 2, 2.8, 4, 5.6, 8, 11. Do you see how it works?
No. I didn't follow along at all. You just blew my mind. All right, I got 1 to 2.
Yeah, so the starting numbers are 1 and 1.4.
Uh-huh.
Double each of them and you get 2 and 2.8, right?
Uh-huh.
And just keep doubling those two numbers.
Oh, 5.6. Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah.
And each of those is a doubling. Every step
each
of
those
a doubling
is half as much light, yeah. So to go from F1.4 to 2 would be half as much light, and then to go from F2 to F2.8 is half as much light again. So the difference between a 12mm prime that's F1.4 and a zoom lens that's F2.8 is a 4x reduction in light performance.
God, you're good.
So that's really, mostly that's the biggest concern, is if I need that low light performance, I'm bringing out the prime. And if I don't need it, and if I don't need as much shallow depth of field, then it's nice to have that versatility of the zoom lens.
Yep, makes sense.
Our final email today comes from Sepeda, who is in film school right now, but he feels like he's not getting the training he really needs for this industry from his teachers. And he actually finds that YouTube and Google are doing most of his training. And I mean, I've experienced that too. I think I've learned probably most of what I use in my career now from YouTube tutorials. But he's just wondering, is film school...
But you're not learning those French words. You need to describe mise en scène.
Yeah, right? I did learn mise en scène in film school.
So that's important.
I probably do take for granted how much I learned in my 1 to 2 years in film school before I failed out. But I think, to his point, is film school necessary? No, because I did do some of it. I didn't follow through with it. And then I finished my degree in a normal university with a regular communication degree. And I've found that I think anything you're passionate about, you can learn that on your own and find like-minded people, regardless what major you're in. I mean, Nick, you were a theater major, and you're not doing that right now.
Nope. Well, do you think, though, and this is speaking as someone who's never been to film school, is film school more about the art and less about the mechanics?
No, I think it's, you know, hopefully... I think it would be pretty balanced. I feel like it was a balanced approach at NYU. We learned how to physically cut film, and we did a lot of technical things, but we also spent a lot of time watching films and talking about films. I remember I had a professor at NYU who, I think our second week of coming back to class, he asked everyone what movies they saw that week, and I think no one saw anything. And he was like, "What are you doing? You're film majors. You should be going and watching movies all the time. We need to... be consuming the stuff and talking about it and thinking about it."
Makes sense.
But he's wondering, Sepeda is wondering if he should bother finishing his degree in the next 2 years, or if he should give up and just make a lot of films, if he should be spending this time differently.
Well, that's a tough question.
Yeah. And while I don't think film school is necessary for learning the craft of film, you can be in any program, or you don't even necessarily have to go to college to do that, I do think that a degree can be valuable. I mean, surely we each got our first jobs out of college because we had a degree.
Yep.
I'm not even sure they cared what degree we had, but just having a college degree, at least in the U.S., helps you kind of jump that economic barrier.
Yep, I agree. I'd say if you've already got 2 years in, I'd keep chugging along if it's me, but...
Yeah. In fact, when I was, like, in the process of failing out of school, I think before NYU told me not to come back, I was kind of wondering if I should go back because I was doing so poorly. And a lot of my friends were saying, you just got to stick it out. You know, you got 2 more years. If you can, you know, just put in the work, you'll at least have a degree at the end of it.
Yep.
So Sepeda also had some other questions about how do you start without money? I guess after you graduate, how do you get started in this career and then promoting your work? And he's also wondering, because he said that he knows that you and I did some free wedding videos at the beginning, but how did you even find people to give free videos? I actually don't think we did a free video.
No, but it was basically free.
Yeah. I think our first wedding was like $200.
Yeah, and we split it.
Yeah.
But that was teachers, right? So we were in high school, and we were the video nerds, and
yeah,
we just had young teachers getting married, and they were like, hey, come take a video. And we're like, yes, we're getting paid. It's the best.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so I mean, it helps, obviously, to find some paid work, even if it's not that much. It'll lead to more paid work, and that makes it a little bit easier to spend money. I guess you can't get started with no money in this industry. We did have to split the cost of a GH1, which I think cost $750 in 2010. So that was one big way that we saved money, was just splitting the cost of everything between ourselves.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, you find friends who have gear already and use what you can for free.
Yeah, and rent if you have to. You know, if you know someone getting married and they're not going to pay for a videographer, maybe say, hey, if you just cover the cost of renting a camera and a lens, I'll come shoot your, you know, wedding for you. Why not?
Yeah. And I feel conflicted about doing really cheap work, but I guess, you know, when you are at the very beginning and maybe you're concerned about like offending them, like you give them a product and they just hate it and they're mad at you because they spent money on it, there is a value to you testing out your skills on someone, probably a friend's wedding, not a stranger.
Exactly. Although I would think 2 years into film school, you could probably get some cash for your efforts.
Yeah. Although his point is good. You know, plenty of people could go to film school for 2 years and understand a lot of the techniques and art, but not have a lot of practical experience. You know, you may not even know how to use a particular camera. So you need to pair that practical real life experience with what you're learning in school.
Yep, makes sense.
We did it. We answered every question.
Yes.
The podcast is... we could just cancel the podcast now. There's
like
no more.
A well-oiled machine.
Actually, I think we'll get more questions next week.
You think?
I don't know. Keep
what
coming.
What if we run out?
Well, you all listening can save the podcast by continuing to send us your questions, although that's never been a problem. In fact, there's plenty of questions we don't get to, so I apologize to the people that we don't answer your questions.
It means Griffin doesn't like you. It's not me, because Griffin does all the work, so can't blame me. Gotta blame Griffin.
Actually, if you want to send a question directly to Nick, well, one, you can comment on YouTube, but also you can email nick@hey.film if you have a Nick-specific question or G85 comment.
I would love to hear if anyone has a good reason why I should go with the GH5 over the G85. What am I missing? What am I not noticing?
As the global brand ambassador for the Lumix GH5, I will tell you that it's a great camera and you should buy that one, Nick.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Sounds good.
No, it's hard to argue with that price point on the G85 if you don't need every feature the GH5 has.
Yep. Well, friends, it's been a pleasure, but now our time has come to an end.
Yep. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye. Now it's done. Now I'm in my head. All right, one more. Okay. I got it.
Okay.